It's again a great blessing and privilege to be engaged in worship with you this evening, and trust that the Lord will see fit to season our thoughts with His Spirit from above, and that our efforts would be both glorifying to Him and honoring and edifying unto the body of Christ. I'd like to this evening pass from the series that we are investigating in 1 Peter, and I'd like to direct your attention to a very familiar verse that's been on my mind for several weeks. I've preached it in various places and have a desire to preach it here tonight. In the 6th chapter of Jeremiah, in the 16th verse, and maybe even the 17th verse if we get a chance to get to it, there is an exchange given between the Lord and His people. And this exchange is delivered to them by the hand of Jeremiah. And this is a verse that we as the household of faith are very familiar with. We've heard it talked about many times. But Jeremiah 6:16 says, "Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein." And then in verse 17 he says, "Also I set watchmen, saying, hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not hearken." When you look at the setting for this verse, Jeremiah had a very difficult circumstance. He was a man who was called of God to preach to a people who had slidden down the scale in disobedience so bad that when hard times came, when trouble came their way, instead of being renewed in their vigor and their dependence upon God, they grew even more embittered and went even further away from God. And when you think about crisis and distress in the world in which we live, it's going to do one of two things. Nobody deals with a crisis or a distress and stays exactly the way they are. When you see people that have lived through certain things, it has a way of changing them. It changes their appearance. It changes their mindset, their disposition. And a lot of the things that we face and the way that we are is a product of what we face. I heard an old expression. It was written by one of our forefathers in the faith, Elder J.H. Oliphant, and he had this to say about the church. He said, "Every church's generation is defined by the battles that they fight." And that is indeed the case. That when you look at how the church functions and how she operates, a lot of it is defined largely by the battles that she faces. We are blessed in this time and in this particular nation to not be defined by worshiping in secret, by worshiping for fear of somebody coming in and putting us in jail or shooting us for what we believe. And that's a very blessed case. But other generations in the church have been defined that way. All of their meeting was in secret. It was done in the basements of homes. It was done in the middle of the woods. It was done at night so that people didn't know where they were worshiping or when they were worshiping. And they were defined by that. We have not been. But this particular generation of people that Jeremiah is prophesying unto, he begins his prophesying days to the land of Judah before they go into Babylonian captivity, and he lives and prophesies through the time when they are carried into Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar. And he had the charge given to him by God of going to preach to people that he was told by God, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to basically take your message and they're going to reject it, and they're not going to heed a word that you say. This got so bad, it actually backed up on Jeremiah so terribly that in Jeremiah chapter 20, he basically says, "I'm done." He says, "I've had it. I'm through. I'm not speaking anymore. I've had it, you know, trying to deliver the message of the Lord. Nobody's listening. Nobody cares. I'm checking out. It's all over with." But being a minister of the gospel or being a prophet of the Old Testament, he had something that no man can give him. He had something that no earthly force could put in. He had a calling that he called a fire shut up in his bones. And it was one that just burned so hot that he said he was weary with forbearing and he could not stay. He had to speak because he knew that the Lord had called him to do this and he couldn't forbear anymore. And I'll tell you, friends, whether you're a minister or whether you're not, we all ought to have a burning and a fire down in our soul. We ought to have a deep-rooted passion to want to do what the Lord would have us do His will. But here's Jeremiah preaching to these people or declaring to these people things that they're not going to listen to. Now, I know you've heard this verse talked about a good bit. I've actually talked about it here from time to time, but I'd like to look at it in a different way, a way that I started to see a few months ago. This verse is actually defined, from our perspective, by five action words. If you look at what the five action words are for us, the first one is stand, the second one is see, the third one is ask, the fourth one is watch, and the fifth one is find. And these are all action words on our part. And I'd like to say this about commands in the Bible. When the Lord commands us to do something, and He requires of us to do things in His service, He is going to give us the grace required to serve Him, but He's not going to put forth the effort to do the work. We have to put forth the effort ourselves. I've heard people say before, when it comes to folks joining the church, well, they'll join whenever the Lord's ready for them to join. Now, I understand that somebody is not going to join the church until they see the beauty of it and they see the glory of it. But friends, God doesn't pick people up and drag them down the aisle to join the church. God doesn't pick them up and dunk them in the water and bring them back up again. God doesn't pick us up and put our Bible in front of us and have our eyes read it. These are all things that we have to do ourselves. And as this action is required of us, it behooves us to understand how we are to go about in an orderly fashion doing what the Lord would have us do. One of the things that I learned very quickly in my secular education is that there are orders of things that are very important. When I started out in math, we learned the order of operation. For you to get the right number at the end, you had to carry on these different things in the right order. And I believe Jeremiah 6:16 gives us an order that we need to follow. He says, "Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways." Now, we understand from Scripture that the word stand is not always referring to being upright, as I am right now. I mean, physically, I'm standing and you're sitting, but that's not what this is talking about. Paul would actually have it said this way in Ephesians chapter 6, in verse 13, as he gets ready to declare all the armor of God that we're to put on. He says, "Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the adversary, and having done all, to stand." Now, he's not saying that if we're going to be proper Christian soldiers, we never physically lie down. He's not saying that if we're to be proper Christian soldiers, we never sleep. He's rather saying that for us to be proper Christian soldiers, there is a certain way in which we need to go about life. The word stand here has reference to your mindset, to the way that you think and the way that your brain operates. And friends, when it comes to the way our brain operates, we have to unteach ourselves certain things. We've got to unlearn certain things because we all come into this world and our brain is geared into one thing and one thing only. It's me and then everything else. I mean, you all hear and see the little rascals that live in my home. You know, grandparents probably don't believe this, but you know what that is? You know what that crying is? There's nothing wrong with those children, I might say. You know what's wrong with them? They're saying in those cries and those wails and those screams, "Me, me, me, me." Because that's how we come into this world, thinking about me. What I want, what I desire, what I have, and what everybody else is just secondary. Well, friends, a disciple of Christ has to unlearn and unteach himself those things. He has to learn that it's not all about him. It's not all about what he wants. It's not all about what he would desire. It's what would the Lord have me do, and what would the Lord require of me, and let me do it to the very best of my ability. For us to stand as we should, we have to understand that it's all about Him, and whatever we do should be geared towards Him. Stand in the ways. Now, when it comes to standing in the ways here are all the different decisions you make in life. I mean, every day you have decisions to make. You had a decision when you got up this morning whether to come to church or not. You had a decision about, you know, where to go today, where to drive, how to get there, and all these different things. You make decisions every day, and these are the ways in which you pass through. And we need to have the right mindset about how it is that we are to approach our walk in life. And then the next thing he says, after you stand in the ways, he says, "And see." Now, this should be obvious and apparent, but it's not. Because a lot of times we don't see what it is we need to see. One of my favorite ways of looking at this, have you ever driven down a road, and it's a road you've traveled for years, and as you've traveled down that road, one day you look out and you say, "Man, when did they build that house?" Has that ever happened to y'all? I mean, I didn't see the construction, but that's got to be brand new. I've been down this road every day for 5 years. Where did that come from? Well, the thing of it is, friends, the house has always been there. It's always been sitting there. You've just never seen it. Your eyes may have passed over it. It may have, you know, encountered your actual orbitals here. But friends, you didn't see it even though it was really there. And I want to tell you, there are a lot of things in life and there's a lot of things in God's Word that they've always been there. We just hadn't seen them yet. One of the favorite expressions that I used to hear whenever folks would rejoice in the truth and come to the truth, you know what they'd say? They'd say, "Where has this been all this time?" Well, friends, it's always been there. The difference is they just hadn't seen it yet. And the truth was the truth before you and I saw it, and the truth will go on being the truth after you and I are gone. But we need to see things as they ought to be seen. You know, whenever Jesus appeared to the two disciples on the road to Emmaus in Luke 24, they actually physically saw Jesus. But did they see Jesus? No. Their eyes were holding, and they could not tell that it was Jesus who taught with them. I'm going to tell you, Jesus has been in a lot of places in my life, and I haven't seen Him as I ought to see Him. Either one, because I wasn't looking as I ought to look, or two, I was being withheld by some other force from being able to see Him. You know what Jacob said in Genesis chapter 28, when he's on the run from his brother Esau, and he finds himself in the middle of the wilderness, and he lays down at night, and he sees the dream of the ladder from earth to heaven, with angels ascending and descending upon the ladder. Jacob awoke from his dream, and what did he say? He says, "Surely the Lord has been in this place, and I knew it not." Have you ever been the case with you that the Lord was with you? The Lord was in a place, and you knew it not? Friends, the reason that is because we haven't seen what we need to see. One of the things that my children ask me all the time is they say, "What is that? What is that? What is that? What is that?" And sometimes I want to say, "Enough. No more questions." If that makes me a bad father, it makes me a bad father. But after about the 25th or 250th question, you get the point. You're just tired of saying what this is and what that is, especially when they ask you the same thing five times. What is that? The same thing it was 2 minutes ago. Now, what they are doing is they are looking at something and they want to see it. They want to understand what it is. Well, I'm going to tell you, friends, we need to look at this, but we need to see it and understand it for what it is. We need to see the Lord as He ought to be seen. We need to see Him high and lifted up. As Isaiah said in Isaiah 6 and 1, he says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord high and lifted up. And His train filled the temple, and the temple was filled with the glory of His beauty." You and I need to understand that God is in this world. God is present. His power is manifest, and His power is seen. But I want to see it and understand it for what it really is. Because, friends, He is everywhere present and nowhere absent. I believe He is still in this country, as it was prayed in the prayer. The only reason this country still stands is because God is still here. And this country will stand as long as God is pleased to bless it. And I hope and pray and feverishly desire that God would continue to have a desire to bless this country and watch over her for the benefit of us and those following after us. So whenever you approach life, you have to have the right mindset. You've got to stand in the right way. But as you see, as you go in all these different ways, you come to all these crossroads and all these decisions, you need to see and understand what it is that you're looking at, understand what it's pointing to, and understand the right way to go. And after you see, it says, and then ask for the old paths. I find it interesting that in a list of five action verbs, asking is right in the middle. It's not at the beginning, it's not at the end, it's in the middle. You know, a lot of our problem is we either talk too early or we talk too late. You ever notice that? We hardly ever talk on time. Am I the only one that has that problem? Y'all are all looking at me like, "You're the only one, preacher." Well, I'm going to tell you, either I talk too fast or I talk too slow. I'm either too quick to the game or I'm too late getting there. Well, friends, asking is something that is neither something you start with or something you end with. It's something that's right in between. A lot of times when we start talking and we start asking too soon, we ask because, and it's wrong because we don't really know what it is we're dealing with. One of the things that I'm learning the very difficult and hard way is my children take after their mother's side of the family when it comes to watching movies. And this is not a secret. This is not something that's an issue that my wife and I are ill at each other about. But I cannot watch movies with my in-laws because every 5 seconds they're saying, "What's going on? What's about to happen? What is this about? Who's the bad guy?" And I'm like, "Enough! You know, by the time the movie's over, your questions will be answered." Movies have a wonderful way of answering their own questions by the end of it. Well, I watch movies with my children, and it's something they've seen 500 times, and they still ask me, "Daddy, what's about to happen? Who's about to do this? Where are they going?" I'm like, "You've already seen this. This isn't new information." But, you know, my son and I went to the movie theaters yesterday, and I told him before we got there, I said, "We are going to the movie theaters." I said, "What happens when you're in the movie theater?" He says, "We be quiet." I said, "That's right. We be quiet. Because we don't want to disturb anybody else. That means any questions you have, you wait till the credits roll, and I'll take your questions about the movie." Now, I said all that to say this. Whenever we talk too soon, whenever we ask questions too soon, we're doing it because we're asking about things we don't really know what it is we're supposed to ask. Remember what James said in James chapter 3? He says two things. He says, "You have not." Why? Because you ask not. Sometimes we don't have what we need because we're not asking for it. But sometimes we're actually asking. He goes on, he says, "But you have not because you ask amiss, that you may consume it upon your lust." When we don't even know what it is we're supposed to be asking for, it's a time to be quiet and keep our mouths shut and then finally learn and stand and see what it is we're supposed to open our mouths about. You remember what happened to Job in Job chapter 37. In Job chapter 37, when the Lord appears on the scene, Job has been having a conversation with three miserable comforters for several chapters. And they had actually goaded Job to the point where he actually sought to justify himself. Job had actually done nothing wrong. They had challenged him to the point where he actually spent his time justifying himself. And as a matter of fact, the few chapters before chapter 37, there's a young man named Elihu who appears on the scene, and he gets mad. And he gets mad at everybody. He gets mad at Job, and he gets mad at the three people who are challenging him and goading him. And he's mad at all these different people. One, because these three men over here, they don't have an answer for Job, and they're challenging him with things that they can't prove. And he's mad at Job because he sought to justify himself rather than God. And when God arrives on the scene in Job chapter 37, he appears out of a whirlwind, and he says, "Who is this that darkeneth counsel with words without knowledge?" In other words, words without knowledge is what God calls darkening counsel. We should not speak of things we don't know. And here's what he demands of Job. He says, "Job, gird up thy loins like a man, and I'll demand of thee and answer me my questions." And he says, "Job, where were you when I did this? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Where were you when I set the stars in the sky? Where were you when I put the cattle upon the hills? Where were you when I did all these things?" In other words, Job, don't seek to justify yourself. I am God. I am He who you justify, and I am He who you glorify. You know what Job's response is? He says, "Once have I spoken." And he says, "And twice I will not open my mouth." He says, "But I'll put my hand upon my mouth, and thou shalt speak, and I will answer thee." In other words, Job says, "I've talked too soon, and I'm not going to do it again. Lord, I'm going to cover my mouth, and then whenever you tell me what it is I know, then I'll speak." One of the verses I mentioned this morning, a verse that I am very fond of, I got a kick out of looking at it again this evening as we were singing. Your Bible, by the way, if you don't know this, it will easily open to the place you spend the most time in. I know one preacher that he could actually throw his Bible down and it would open to the 8th chapter of Romans every time. That's just how his Bible opened. Well, if you took my Bible and you just did like this, I tell you where it's going to open. It's going to open to the 40th chapter of Isaiah. I make no bones about it. It's probably my favorite chapter in all the Bible. It's a chapter that begins with comfort, and it's a chapter that ends with renewing your strength. It's a really good chapter that declares the glory of God and the comfort that men should have in reference to their Creator. But as that chapter ends, in Isaiah 40 and 31, he says, "But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." You know, for the longest time, I pretty much ended my thoughts at that verse. I thought, okay, that's a wonderful end of this chapter. But friends, the very next verse, if you ignore the chapter division, Isaiah 41 and 1 actually tells you how it is that you renew your strength. He says in Isaiah 41 and 1, he says, "But let the islands keep silence before me." He says, and let them renew their strength. You know how it is that you renew your strength the way Isaiah 40 declares? It's keeping silence before God. And sometimes, friends, what we need is we need to just come near unto God and let Him speak. We don't need to open our mouth. We don't need to tell Him like we're acquainting Him with our troubles. We just need to come before Him and be quiet. In Habakkuk 2:20, he says, the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. You say, but I thought I was supposed to talk to God. I thought I was supposed to pray to God. We are. But friends, for us to pray and ask and seek properly, we need to understand what it is we're supposed to be asking for, what it is we're supposed to be seeking for. And He says, let them come near and keep silence before Me, and let the people renew their strength, and then let them speak with Me, one with another. For us to properly speak and ask before God, we've got to keep silence first and renew our strength to understand what it is we're supposed to ask for. One of the things that has always intrigued me about the lesson in 1 Kings chapter 19 is that in 1 Kings chapter 19, the Lord gives Elijah an experience in a cave. And the experience that He gives him in a cave is this. Elijah experiences four things, and the Bible specifically tells us that three of those things God was not responsible for. He saw and experienced a great fire, a wind, and an earthquake. And it specifically says the Lord was not in the fire, the Lord was not in the wind, and the Lord was not in the earthquake. Well, I have a question. Is the Lord ever in those things? Yes, He is. The Bible tells us that He was in the fire that came down from heaven the chapter before in 1 Kings chapter 18. Elijah was up on Mount Carmel, and you all know the story. Elijah called fire down from heaven by God's power, and the fire ate up the altar, it ate up the sacrifice on the altar, it ate up the stones that the altar was made out of, and it licked up all the water in the trench around the altar. This was a fire that God was in. We also know that God is in great winds. I mean, He caused a mighty east wind to roll the Red Sea back one night. God was in that wind. And we understand that He's in earthquakes too. Because in Numbers chapter 16, He had the earth open up and swallow up Korah and Dathan and Abiram and their whole company and close the earth back up on top of them. Now I'll say this, and this is too rough today, I don't mean for it to be. There are many things that we will experience in life that we cannot necessarily charge God for. Sometimes God causes winds, sometimes He doesn't. Sometimes God causes fire, sometimes He doesn't. Sometimes God causes earthquakes, sometimes He doesn't. And if we don't know whether He has or whether He hasn't, what is the thing for us to do? Put our hand on our mouth and not speak about it. I tell you, whenever I hear ministers on the radio and ministers on TV saying, see here, here is God's judgment. I'm going to tell you, I'm not willing to make that claim because I just don't know. But I'll tell you what I do know. There is one thing God is always in. Because the fourth thing that Elijah experienced was a still small voice. He experienced a still small voice that basically told him where to go, what to do, and how to do it. And I tell you, friends, there's a still small voice that still speaks to God's people today. It's a still small voice that is only and can only be God Himself. It's a voice that only God's children can hear. And I tell you this, it's only a voice you'll hear when all the other things are cleared out of your life. If you've got too many fires, you've got too many irons in the fire, if you've got too many winds going on, if you're being tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine, and if the earth is quaking around you and making you tremble in your bones and in your spirit, we'll pay so much attention to the commotion outside that we'll miss the still small voice of Him speaking unto us. I tell you, friends, I don't think, the Bible obviously doesn't say this happened, but it doesn't say that it didn't either. I obviously don't think that Christ, there on the Sea of Galilee that night, when He came walking to Him on the water, do you think He had to shout to get His voice across? Do you think He had to holler so that they would hear Him? I tell you, He didn't, friends. All He had to say was, fear not, be not afraid, it is I. And I tell you, friends, a minister, I realize I'm loud, I get it. But a minister doesn't have to holler to get his point across. He's not hollering, and when he starts hollering, then he's finally preaching. I've seen a lot of men preach from a very steady, reserved tone. I'm not that way, obviously. You've had me here long enough, you know that. But friends, to get your point across, you don't have to be loud. To get your point across, you don't have to be boisterous. And when the Lord gets His point across, He does it many times in a still, small voice. I realize He can thunder from heaven like He did in His Son's ministry when He thundered down and said, this is My beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. But friends, He doesn't have to do that. And I'll tell you, the most common way He speaks is not like that. The most common way He speaks is in a still, small voice to the beating heart of the spirit of a child of God. And when He speaks that way, we need to listen. But for us to get to that point, we've got to be standing as we should, seeing and looking as we should, and then knowing what it is that we ought to ask for. You know, when Isaiah finally saw the Lord high and lifted up, when he saw His train filling the temple, he heard the Lord say something. He heard the Lord say, "Whom shall I send? And who shall go for us?" And Isaiah said, "Here am I. Send me. I'll go. I'll do whatever you say do. I'll go wherever you say go, and I'll do it however you would like it done." And friends, that ought to be our course in life. If the Lord says it, we do it. If the Lord commands, we go. As Mary told those servants in John chapter 2, "Whatsoever He saith unto you, do it." And friends, that's good advice for us to follow today. And if somebody ever tries to make you feel foolish for having that mindset, for you standing in that way, I tell you, you don't need to feel foolish. They do. You know, somebody told me one time, "You'd just do whatever the Bible told you to do, wouldn't you?" I said, "I'd try." They say, "Well, that's just foolish." I said, "Well, you may think so, but I don't. Because, friends, this book is wiser than any man." You know why? Because this book wasn't written by a man. This book was written by God Himself. And as such, it knows more than I do. It's got more wisdom than I've got. And I need to go to this to find out what I need to do. If the Bible says it, do it. If the Bible says don't do it, don't do it. And friends, if you can't find in the Bible what it says to do or don't do, ask the Lord for Him to show you what it is you need to do or not do. So He says to ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And I'd like to just make one comment on this and move along. One of the things that this verse a lot of times has done to show is it's done to show us that the old paths are what we should be following, what we should be seeking. Now, I don't want to turn anybody's idea of this verse upside down, but I'd like to point out something that this verse makes a distinction of. This verse says, standing in the ways, plural. Asking for the old paths, plural. Where is the good way, singular. One of the things that this verse teaches me, I trust it's of the Lord, is that this verse teaches me that everything that is good is old. But not everything that is old is good. Because there's many old paths, but there is one good way in the midst of those old paths. Just because something is old doesn't make it good. But if something is good, it is necessarily old because God is the one who offered it. You know, there are a lot of things in this world that are very old. There are a lot of things in this world that have been around for a long time. There's a city somewhere over in Italy that a man's been sitting in for centuries who everybody believes is God incarnate here on earth. Friends, that's very, very old. But I submit to you it ain't good. There are a lot of things in this world that are old that I submit to you ain't good. But I tell you, everything that is good, it's old because it's something that God has authored and not man. So once you have asked for the old paths where the good way is, He says, walk therein. And friends, this gets right back into Isaiah 40 and 31. He tells us that after we've renewed our strength by waiting upon the Lord, and we understand waiting upon Him is keeping silence and then asking Him, it says, they shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. There are some things that we're going to be called upon to do in life that by nature are very tough. They're very difficult. This morning I talked about how we as the people of God, as the household of faith, we can do things that by nature just should not happen. You know, by natural standards, should the church even be here on this earth? No, sir, she should not be. You know why? Because the church has been the most persecuted group for the longest time of any organization on this earth. But yet she's been standing longer than any organization on this earth because she's been kept by the providential power of God and she's been inhabited by faithful men and women down through the centuries who have upholded the things that God would have them believe and have them to teach. You and I are part of a group of people that by natural standards should not be here. I mean, the devil's been fighting for 2,000 years to stamp the church out of existence, and he hadn't done it yet. And I tell you, he's not going to do it. Now, he'll have battles, he'll have victories and battles here and there. He has obviously won the battle against the seven churches of Asia. You know how I know that? Because they're not here anymore. Ephesus ain't here. Pergamos isn't here. Thyatira isn't here. Sardis isn't here. Philadelphia isn't here. Laodicea certainly is not here. All these seven churches are gone. The devil won those battles. He has won the battles in recent years. There's a whole swath of the country in the Northeast that used to be full of churches. About 150 years ago in this country, there were more churches in the New England area than anywhere else in the country. Did you know that? There were more people in those churches than in any other area of the country. You know how many churches are in that area now? Three, as far as I know. There are three churches in the New England area when it used to be the largest inhabited population of the household of faith in this country. I tell you, the devil won some battles up there. He won some victories up there. They got overrun with false doctrine. They got overrun with bitterness. And as a result, those churches are gone. But I submit to you, no matter how many battles the devil wins, no matter how many local bodies go under, the devil has lost the war. Because God said he's lost, and the devil knows he's lost, but he keeps fighting anyway. You and I, when we run, we need to understand we're running in a race that God has called upon us to run. We are walking in a walk that God has called upon us to walk, and it's a good way. It's a good path to follow. You know why? Because Jesus Christ walked it Himself. Jesus Christ showed us the race to run. He showed us the path to walk. And if you and I do it as God would have us do it, we'll be able to bear up under any difficulty and any problem that life throws at us. Go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul has been laboring for several verses to show us the example of what not to do. He tells us that we're not to be like the children of Israel. We're not to be like them in the way they murmured, the way they complained, the way they tempted Christ, the way they bickered, the way they argued, in all these different ways. And in verse 12, he has this to say. In 1 Corinthians 10 and 12, it's probably a verse I should have started with. He says, "Let every man that thinketh that he standeth take heed lest he fall." That's good advice for you and I. About the time that you and I think we've got Jeremiah 6:16 figured out, you know what the problem is? We have failed in the very first step. If we ever get to the point where we think, I know exactly how to stand, I know exactly what to do, I know exactly how to walk, I know exactly what to do in all these different situations, we are headed for destruction. You know why? Because we need the Lord's help every day to do these things the right way every day. So he says, "Let every man that thinketh that he standeth take heed lest he fall." Verse 13, "For there hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man." One of the things that the devil wants us to believe is he wants us to believe that nobody has ever faced what you have faced. Nobody has ever dealt with what you've dealt with. Nobody's pain has ever been as bad as your pain. Nobody's discouragement has ever been as bad as your discouragement. That's what the devil wants us to believe. But friends, people have had the same discouragement, the same fears, the same pains, the same afflictions, the same torments that they've always had. Why? Because the devil's temptations are exactly the same. I was asked one time by a man at work, it's been several years ago, he says, "What do I need to look out for when it comes to the devil?" And so I ran through several verses with him of the devil's standard tools and his standard devices. And he says, "But what if he needs something new?" I said, "He doesn't." He said, "Well, how long has he been doing this?" I said, "Since it began." He said, "Well, how come he doesn't change?" I said, "Because he doesn't have to. There's no reason for him to change what he's doing because he has great success with it. Everything you face has been faced before. Why? Because the devil's so successful at getting us to doubt, at getting us to be discouraged, at getting us to be afraid, at getting us to just have a pity party for ourselves. There is no temptation taking you, but such as is common to man." But here's what he says, "But God is faithful." And I love that expression, God is faithful. Not he was faithful, not he will be faithful, he is faithful right now. Friends, he has been faithful all down through eternity. He's been faithful in time. He'll be faithful in the future into all eternity. But friends, he is faithful right now today. He is not waiting until the end of time to take you home to be with him. He is with you right now. He has not left you until he brings you into heaven. He's with you right now. He is faithful to every promise he made right now, currently today. Do you believe that? I do. Do I always show that in my life? No, I don't. I get discouraged. I get cast down. I have doubts. I have fears. You give me a little affliction, a little pain, and I'll quit thinking about what I should think about and think about, oh, how bad my pain is. I mean, let's just face it. Whenever you have a bellyache and you're staring at the toilet because you're throwing up, there's only one thing you're thinking about. This is miserable. You know what we should be thinking about? God, help me. That's what we should be thinking about. Because, friends, He can, and He does. He is faithful right now. And He will not suffer us to be tempted above that which we're able. There is no person on earth who has ever said, this load is greater than I can bear. This journey is more difficult than I can overcome. Why? Because everything that we could not bear, He took it out of the way. Everything we couldn't overcome, He took it out of the way. You know where He brought it? He brought it to Calvary, and He nailed it to His cross, and He left it there. He spoiled principalities and powers, and He took everything that was against us out of the way, and He suffered what you and I should suffer because we couldn't bear it and we couldn't endure it, and He could. So what has He given us? He's given us a way to escape in that day of temptation. How? Or why? That you may be able to bear it. You and I have been given every opportunity by God to bear whatever comes. Now, I didn't say the walk was going to be easy. But I'm telling you, the walk is not more difficult than you can bear. And me either. This good way to walk therein, it's going to have its fair share of hard times. You're going to have your share of disappointments. I tell you, I've walked on the path of discipleship, or tried to, for many years now. And one thing that I've learned the hard way is things don't always work out like I want. Have you learned that? If you haven't, you need to. Because, friends, things are not going to work out like we always want them to. You know, when God made Abraham a promise when he was 75, what do you think would have happened if God had told Abraham, by the way, it's not going to happen for 25 more years? I tell you, that would be a tough pill to swallow. But you know, he lived every day not knowing when that time of visitation was going to be. You know, I think it's for our benefit and our blessing that we don't know what the future holds. I mean, I'm glad I don't know what the future holds. The only thing about the future that I know is that one day you and I are going to be with Him, and that's worth knowing. Everything between now and then, it's not worth knowing. What if you knew the very moment you were going to die? You knew that in 2 years and 3 months and 2 weeks and 2 days, you were going to die. I tell you, y'all think I drive crazy now. I probably would drive really crazy then. It doesn't matter. I don't need to walk. I don't need to look both ways. I don't need to stop at the stop sign. It's not coming for two more years. It's good that I don't know those things. It's also good that I don't know the kind of disappointments I'm going to have. What if you knew that 2 years from now, your best friend and you were going to get into an argument and you were going to part ways and not talk to each other anymore? How would you deal with that person for the next 2 years? Would you deal with them the way you would have normally? Probably not. You'd be thinking, you know, in 2 years, you're going to really get under my skin and we're just really going to have words and it's just not going to be good. So let's just get it over with now. I'm not talking to you anymore. I mean, that's how we would act if we knew those things. But I tell you, friends, it's good that we don't know the future. It's good that we don't know what is going to happen. But here's what I do know about the future, besides the fact that we're going to be with Him one day. I know that wherever we are now, or wherever we're going to be, God is there and He's given us a way to bear up under whatever happens, under whatever comes. You and I are going to have to walk through some tough times. We're going to have to walk through some difficult places. That's why the Lord calls it in Matthew 7 and verse 13, He calls it a straight gate. He calls it a narrow way. He calls it a very difficult path to follow. Because by nature it's difficult. Our flesh doesn't like it. Our flesh wants to do the very opposite of what brings us pain. It wants us to do the very opposite about what brings us discouragement and distress. I mean, if you knew that by walking this way, the world was going to hate you, you're going to lose friends, you're going to lose associations, you're going to lose fellowship in this world, the flesh would say, oh no, let's not do that. And I'll tell you, it was preached here last Sunday night, and I'll mention it again. If you truly follow the Lord as you should, your ceiling for success in this world is more limited than everybody else's. There are things in life that I have had to forego doing because it was not conducive to the walk of a child of God. Whenever I graduated from college, there was a company that was hiring engineers on the spot. I mean, if you signed up, you were hired, you had a job, and you were going to go somewhere and you were going to make a lot of money. But here's the problem. You were going to make $150,000 a year tax-free by working over in Saudi Arabia. Are there any churches in Saudi Arabia? Nope. Are there people that are kind to Christians over there? Not really. Are there people that would hate you and want to kill you if they knew what you were? Probably. And friends, it was not conducive to me as a child of God and as a disciple of Christ to take that job and go over there and work for a couple of years. Yeah, I'd have been very well off financially. I could have worked over there 2 years and come back with $300,000. You say, exactly $300,000? Yeah, because they pay all your expenses to get there. They pay all your living while you're there. There's no tax on the money you make. I'd have come home and been ready to set up shop, do whatever I want. You know why I didn't do it? because it wasn't conducive to the walk of a child of God. And I'm not putting myself up on some pedestal. I'm trying to make a point that if you want to be successful in this world, you're going to sacrifice your walk as a disciple of Christ. And if you try to be a disciple of the cross of Christ, you are going to sacrifice success in this world. It's no two ways about it. There are things you cannot do as a person who is trying to follow and walk the path that Jesus Christ has set. You know, Jesus Christ was a man when He walked this earth who had more power than anybody had ever seen. And had He wanted to, He could have made Himself a king here on earth and ruled over everybody and had perfect authority and perfect power. You think it would have been hard for Him to keep His subjects in line? No. You think it would have been hard for Him to keep peace and order in His kingdom? No. But what happened when they rushed upon Him and tried to make Him a king by force? It says that He removed Himself from them and departed and went off into a mountain alone. He was a king, yes. He had a kingdom, yes. But He wasn't going to have it the way they wanted to give it to Him. And I tell you, friends, you and I have been given great riches by God. We've been given great wealth from God. We are kings and priests unto God. But we're not kings and priests the way this world would have us be. We are kings and priests in God's kingdom the way God would have us to be. And for us to honor Him and serve Him in that way, we've got to walk the good path, the straight gate, the narrow way. And when we do these things, it says, "And you shall find rest for your souls." You know, there are a lot of people in this world who are looking for things. And I submit to you, they're looking for things they'll never find. There are people who are looking for happiness in this world. And if you're looking to this world for happiness, you ain't going to find it. You may find it for a season, but you're not going to find lasting peace and lasting happiness in this world. You may find things that you'll enjoy for a time, but they won't last forever. I like what the Apostle Paul writes in Hebrews chapter 11, in verse 24. It says, "By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter." You know, here was a man who could have had anything he wanted. He was called the son of the daughter who was the heir to the greatest throne of the greatest empire the world had ever seen. Egypt at that time ruled over all the world. It was mightier, more noble, had more riches than any other kingdom, any other empire. And Moses was in line to the throne. But you know what he did? He forewent all that. He said, "I'm not going to do it." He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God, rather to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Friends, this world will give you pleasures for a little while. It may give you happiness for a little while. It may give you some actual comfort for a little while, but it won't last. The only thing that truly lasts, that is worthwhile, is found in the good way, walking therein when you find rest for your soul. This world won't give it to you. This world can't give it to you. This world doesn't even want to give it to you. What this world wants to give you is just enough to get you out there and make your life miserable. That's what the world wants. That's what the devil wants. He's not your friend. He's not trying to make you happy. He's trying to hook you and get you to do what he wants so that he can watch your life get miserable and shipwrecked and laugh about it. That's what the devil wants. He wants your life like a ship on a rock, just battered and bruised and broken beyond repair. Here's what the Lord desires. The Lord desires that we have rest, peace, and comfort for our soul. The only way you find that is by standing, then seeing, then asking, then walking. You know, there's a lot of people in this world who are looking for what you and I have. You know why they don't find it? The reason they don't find it is because for a lot of them, their mentality is wrong. They're still thinking about themselves. They're still thinking about what I should do. They're thinking about, well, what must I do? Well, how must I accomplish this? Friends, I comes, you know, in order number 17. It's God, then God, then God, then God, then God. And then finally you get to us and what we're supposed to do. And by the time you get to us, everything that's required for us to get to heaven's already been done. Everything else is what we do here in this line. We're in like number 17 in the order. We need to start with Him and keep going with Him until we finally figure out what it is we're supposed to do. And to get there, we've got to have the right mindset. And if some folks even get the right mindset, they say, "Okay, I understand. It's about God. Now it's about God. Then let's do this." No, you got to stand and then see. And to see, you've got to know what this book is saying. You know, one of the problems is today in the world in which we live, it's hard to have a conversation with people about religion. You know why? They don't have a clue what this book says. I know I've talked about this before, but there was a lady I used to work with back when I worked on a different part of base, and she was having a very difficult time. She had lost both of her parents at a very early age. She was orphaned and put in foster care. And she was one who had just suffered a myriad of problems and a lot of disappointments in life. And a friend of mine at work said, "Would you mind talking to Starla?" And I said, "Sure, what's the problem?" He says, "Well, she's just really downcast. She's just really upset because life keeps dealing her just heavy blows, and she keeps saying, 'Why do bad things happen to good people?'" I said, "I'll be happy to try to talk to her." So I did. And I tried to talk to her first about, you know, people in the Bible who'd experienced different disappointments. And I tried to talk to her about Job, and she didn't know who Job was. I started talking to her about Nebuchadnezzar. She didn't know who Nebuchadnezzar was. And finally, I said, "Surely she knows about Abraham." I said, "Well, there's a man in the book of Genesis named Abraham." She goes, "I've never heard of him either." Now, if someone hasn't heard of Abraham, where do you begin when it comes to showing them things in the Word of God? Friends, I'd like to say this, and I don't want anybody to take offense to it. I mean this with all the love that I have in my heart. But if you are waiting for Sunday morning, Sunday night, and all the different times we meet for me to give you all that you need for your walk in life, I'm not going to be able to do it. You know I'm not going to be able to do it? Because there is more here than I can preach out in my lifetime. It requires of us as stewards of the Word of God to get in here daily to understand what this is saying, to see what we need to see. And friends, if you start digging in this, you'll start to see things, you'll start to understand things, and preaching will get even better than it is now. Because you'll say, "Man, he's preaching right where I've been reading." Well, you know, the more you read, the more that happens. I mean, if you read often, I'm going to hit where you've been reading more often than not. If only you read every now and again, I'm probably not going to hit it too often. But if you read every day and you read often, you're going to start getting some things and start seeing some things, and the preaching is going to be even more powerful than it is now. So it's hard sometimes to get folks to see because they haven't even gone to the place where we need to see things. And then when people start asking, it's obvious sometimes that they don't even know what they're supposed to be asking for. They don't know what they're talking about, and they're never going to find what it is they need to find. You know what I have found in the people of God, in the house of God, in the vineyard of our Lord? I have found a rest and a peace that comes with work. You know, that doesn't make any sense by nature. In nature, you're either working or you're resting. I mean, when I go home and I split wood or I do different things around the yard, I'm not resting. I'm working. I'm laboring. But you know, in God's kingdom, we labor and rest at the same time. We labor in His kingdom and rest in His love. We labor in His Word and rest in His goodness. We labor in His Spirit and we rest in His righteousness. We have, friends, rest in our labors here in the house of God. I tell you, I have never once ever preached a sermon and thought, "Whew, that was easy." Friends, preaching is a labor. It's work up here. I know you understand that. When you hug me, I'm sweating bullets. I understand that whenever you have to listen to me, it's a labor because I'm not easy to listen to. But friends, isn't it wonderful that when we leave the house of God, we can say, "I feel so much better than I did before I got there"? And you're not going to find that if you're actually resting naturally. You may find some good natural rest here, but it's only until you're laboring spiritually do you find the rest for your soul that your soul most craves and desires. One of the things that I love about the house of God, it's one of the things that I wouldn't change about it, is that when I leave this place, you know what I feel like I can do? I feel like I can go back out there and fight some more. I feel like I can go back out and tell the devil I'm not going to heed again. I feel like I can go out and face temptation and say, "I will not yield to the temptation." But friends, if I didn't have a place to rest, if I didn't have a place for my soul to delight in, if I didn't have this wonderful peace which passes all understanding, I would be miserable out there. You know why? Because He beats me out there so many times. But aren't you thankful that God has given us tools and He's given us rest and we feel like I can go out and I can fight Him again? But friends, when you find rest for your souls, please take heed. What you find today, you've got to find it all over again tomorrow. What you experience and enjoy today, you've got to experience it to enjoy it all over again tomorrow. Remember I said at the very beginning, or towards the beginning, that when we stand and see and ask and walk, we have to do these things over and over again every day. Because every man that thinketh something, when he doesn't really know what he's talking about, he's going to fall every time. I want to take you one final place. I know I've been up here a long time. I want to take you to one final place. Because it's, friends, it's some of the worst language in the Bible to me. I've been here many times. I'm going to go here again. Judges chapter 16 and verse 20. It's towards the end of the life of a man named Samson. This is a man who had been blessed by God to do many things, been blessed by God to have His presence overcome many enemies. But he was a man who was not godly in a lot of his life. He was not godly in a lot of his walk. And he was deceived and beguiled by a woman named Delilah. And I'll just say this. I've met one Delilah in my life. And when I say that, a woman who was actually named Delilah, my first words to her was, "What were your parents thinking?" You know what? She didn't get it because she never read the Bible. But anyway, I would never dream of naming a daughter Delilah or Jezebel for that matter. So anyway, Delilah had beguiled Samson. She had deceived him. She'd had his hair cut off. And she basically tells him for the third time, no, the fourth time. She tells him for the fourth time, "Samson, the Philistines be upon thee." And in Judges 16 and 20, it says, "Samson arose and shook himself and said, I will go out and bestir myself as at other times. And he wist not that the Lord had departed from him." Friends, I want to tell you, whenever you and I think, "I've learned how to stand, I've learned how to see, I've learned how to ask, I've learned how to walk, and I have found what it is I'm looking for," if we ever get to the point where we think, "I'm done, I've arrived, I don't need the Lord's help anymore, I don't need His guidance anymore, I've got it figured out," you know what's going to happen? We're going to be like Samson. We're going to arise, we're going to say, "I've done this before, I'm going to do it again, I've faced this enemy before, I'm going to face him again," and we won't even understand at that moment that the Lord has departed from us. Friends, you and I have always the Lord on our side. But friends, just because the Lord is on our side doesn't mean that He's always going to stand with us when we stand in a place we shouldn't. He's not always going to honor us when we don't honor Him as we should. He's not going to bless us when we have not prepared for His service the way we should. You know, a lot of times when I come to the house of God and I feel so dry and empty, and I feel so just like a hollow shell, you know, when I look back, I think, you know what? Of course you should feel like a hollow shell. Of course you should feel dry and empty. You know why? Because I haven't put the effort that I should leading up to service that week. And friends, for us to come to service prepared, it requires effort. It requires labor. But we can't just think, "Well, I've been there before, I'll do it again. I've seen this before, I'll do this again." Friends, every day is a new day. Every trial is a new trial. Every situation is a new situation. And sometimes what works today doesn't work tomorrow. Sometimes you need to speak today and tomorrow you need to keep silent. Sometimes today you need to rend and sometimes tomorrow you need to sow. Sometimes today you need to gather stones together and tomorrow cast stones away. Sometimes you need to be at war and sometimes you need to be at peace. I mean, every day is a little different. But Samson arose and said, "I've been here before, I'm going to do this again." And the Lord was departed from him. And I'll tell you, whenever you think you've got it figured out, whenever you and I think that we've got it all under control, the Lord is going to show us who is really in control. Because what happened? Samson was surrounded by his enemies, and there was nothing he could do. And he found himself blind. He found himself in a prison house, walking in a circle in the house of his enemies. He found himself in the direst of all situations. Now, he was blessed at the end to say, "Lord, I know where my strength comes from." He wanted to be avenged, and he wanted the Lord to bring judgment upon his enemies. And the Lord honored him one more time in his death. Well, I'm going to tell you, friends, I don't want to wait to my death for the Lord to honor me. I don't want to wait to my death to say, "Lord, I have failed, but Lord, I have repented. Lord, please forgive me." I don't want to wait to my death to decide to finally serve the Lord. I want to serve the Lord right now. And I want to serve the Lord tomorrow, and I want to serve Him the day after that. And I want my best days to be in front of me so that when I draw my last breath, I may have a life that I look back and say, "I have failed here, and I have failed here, and I have failed here." But I want to look back at my life and say, "Lord, I regret that I waited all that time to finally do what I should." I tell you, nobody who has ever joined the church ever says, "You know what? I am glad I waited this long." But I hear a lot of people say, "I wish I hadn't waited this long." I hear a lot of people say, "I wish I hadn't waited so long to read the Bible." But I never hear anybody say, "Boy, I just started way too soon." I'm going to tell you something, friends. It's not time to wait. It's not time to wait to do the right thing. It's time to do the right thing. Now, sometimes we've got to wait on the Lord to know what it is. But let our mindset and our heart and our engagement be prepared to do what we ought to do. You know why? Because when we're in that mindset, when we're in that way, the Lord is going to honor us. One of the blessed promises that He gives to us is He says, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness." Why? "For they shall be filled." When you have the mindset of saying, "Lord, I need You. Lord, I desire You. Lord, I want to know. Lord, please show me." The Lord has promised, "I'll honor that, and I'll bless that, and I'll fill that soul with the joy and peace that it requires." Have you found rest for your soul? If you have, Keep looking. Keep standing. Keep seeing. Keep walking. Keep doing all these things. You know why? Because there's more to find than you and I have currently found. Even if we find it today, we still hadn't found it all. Even if we see some things today, we haven't seen it all. And even if we've experienced the Lord's presence, I tell you, there's more to experience than we've ever felt. There's more to enjoy than we've ever enjoyed. And I want to keep digging. I want to keep learning. I want to go further. I want to know more. And I want to keep finding rest for my soul. Because friends, you'll find something here you won't find anywhere else. You'll find something in this you won't find anywhere else. You'll find something in this people that you won't find anywhere else. Because this is the Lord's house. This is the Lord's book. This is the Lord's people. And this is where the Lord dwells. May we dwell here with Him and be pleased to dwell here, as the psalmist said, all the days of my life. May the Lord bless you, is my prayer.